Chapter 7. The headlights blinked three times. Borodini's driver gave an answering two blinks.
All right, said Victor Borodini. Let's go see what he wants this time.
He got out of the car on the right side. Rick got out on the left. They walked around to the front of the heavily armored limo. Two men fell in beside them. The doors of the other limo opened, and they saw several men get out and step forward, silhouetted against the headlights. Carmen stood in the center.
Okay, let's go, said Borodini.
They started walking toward each other. When they were almost halfway across the garage, Rick and the other two men stopped, while Borodini continued on alone to meet the white-haired man coming toward him. Suddenly, he hesitated. The man coming toward him wasn't Carmen. Borodini stopped. The other man kept coming toward him.
What is this? Borodini said. Who the hell are you?
Behind him, he'd hear the sound of his men drawing back the bolts of their weapons.
All right, nobody move, shouted Rick.
The man coming toward Borodini stopped. He reached up slowly and took off his wig. It wasn't Carmen, but a considerably younger man with a military haircut. The men behind him had their weapons up as well.
Captain Dixon, Federal Marshal, he said. Tell your men to lower their weapons, Borodini. They're completely surrounded.
Borodini heard the sound of more bolts being drawn back. He looked back over his shoulder and saw armed men dressed in riot gear stepping out from concealment behind supporting pillars and parked cars. Dixon drew a semi-automatic and pointed it at Borodini.
What the hell is this? A bust? What's the charge?
Just take it easy and nobody'll get hurt, said Dixon. It's not you we're after. We're about to have a visitor.
The radio on his belt crackled.
Look out, the team leader. Steele's on his way down.
Dixon took the radio and spoke into it.
Roger. Attention all units. Okay, people, we've got him. Let's roll.
Son of a bitch, said Borodini.
You can either help or stay out of the way, said Dixon. What's it gonna be?
Borodini glared at him.
You tell Carmen I'll deal with him later. Right now, I've got a score to settle with that goddamn cyborg. Rick!
Rick Borodini and his men came running up, their weapons ready.
They're all yours, said Borodini.
Then he turned around and started walking back toward his car.
Steele had reached the second parking level when he knew something was wrong. He had his hearing turned up, listening intently for the slightest sound, and he heard the conversation coming from the level just below him.
Son of a bitch!
You can either help or stay out of the way. What's it gonna be?
You tell Carmen I'll deal with him later. Right now, I've got a score to settle with that goddamn cyborg. Rick!
And then he heard the sound of screeching tires behind him as several vehicles came roaring into the garage. Cursing, he ran halfway across the second parking level and ducked behind a support pillar. He heard the screech of brakes as six vehicles came pulling into the second level, one after the other, four armored cruisers and two vans. They stopped just ahead of the ramp, the cruisers in front of the vans, lined up four across. The back doors of the vans opened to disgorge several squads of federal marshals in full riot gear. They fanned out behind the cruisers.
Fuck!
Said Steele under his breath. From the third level, he heard a voice speaking over a bullhorn.
Steele, this is Captain Dixon, Federal Marshal. I know you can hear me. You're boxed in. There's no way out. Give yourself up.
Like hell,
said Steele to himself. The two vans were now positioned end to end, blocking off the ramp.
Steele, last chance. You hear me?
He saw the gun turrets of the cruisers swiveling around as the drivers tested them. The men on foot were lined up behind the cruisers with their weapons ready. Steele glanced at the parked cars around him. They were battered gypsy cabs, reconditioned relics, a couple of ancient pickups, nothing armored or with any built-in weapon systems. He'd need something fairly heavy.
Okay, boys. Take him.
The cruisers started inching forward very slowly, their powerful engines throbbing, their searchlights sweeping the shadows. Ducking down low, Steele ran over to a battered, rusted-out pickup truck with heavily patched bodywork. He put down his rifle and crawled under the truck bed. Using his extended right index finger, he quickly poked several holes in the gas tank, and the fuel started dribbling out. He wriggled out from under the truck, picked up his rifle, tucked it under his left arm, and wrenched the door open, breaking the lock. The sound of the cruiser's powerful engines in the close confines of the garage drowned out the noise. They were being very cautious, creeping forward slowly, barely above idle. They were not quite halfway to where he was. Steele rotated his turret attachment. It whirred, clicked into place, and a combination of pliers and wire cutter came sliding out of the turret and opened out.
He ripped out the wires underneath the dash and quickly hot-wired the truck. The starter whined. Come on! Start, you motherfucker! It caught and roared to life, sounding like a motorboat. No way they'd fail to hear that, he thought. Steele quickly rotated his turret attachment again and brought the dart launcher into place. He ejected the magazine holding the stun darts and tossed it on the floor of the cab, then snapped in the one containing the explosive-tipped rocket darts. The hell with it. There was no time for halfway measures. He grabbed the wheel with his right hand and wrenched it hard, breaking the steering lock, then shifted into gear and peeled out. The cruisers opened up on him with their machine guns the moment the pickup truck pulled out into the main aisle. Steele ducked down as the windshield shattered and floored the accelerator, aiming the truck straight at the cruisers. Then he flung open the door and dropped out. The cruisers tried to get out of the way, but lined up abreast the way they were. They couldn't do it in time. The two on the outside managed to peel off between the support pillars, but the truck slammed into the center two, and as Steele came up, he fired a dart at the truck's undercarriage. The dart shot out of the launch tube, and about halfway into the truck, its rocket propulsion kicked in. It whooshed toward the truck and exploded on impact, setting off the leaking fuel. The truck blew up as if shot by a bazooka, raining flaming fuel and scrap metal on the other cruisers and the men behind them. Steele didn't waste any time. He knew the men on the third level would be moving in behind him in seconds. He started running, moving fast, firing his dart launcher as fast as he could at the remaining cruisers, and firing three-round bursts one-handed with his battle rifle. Each three-round burst sounded like one shot, but it sent out three 4.7mm bullets every time he pulled the trigger. Automatic weapons opened up behind him as the men came up behind him on the third level. The armor-piercing round slammed into the concrete and steel support pillars, taking huge chunks out at, taking huge chunks out them as he ducked from one to the other. He felt several rounds impact on his left shoulder, spinning him halfway around. Ignored them, recovered, used his turret to flip the selector on the battle rifle to full auto, and sprayed a long burst at the men coming up the ramp. Bullets were ricocheting all over the place, and with the din from all the weapons, it was next to impossible for the marshals and Borodini's men to hear any shouted commands from Dixon, even with the bullhorn. The marshals had made one serious mistake. They had him hemmed in from both sides, but at the same time, it resulted in a dangerous crossfire. And Steele had an advantage over them in that he had no uncertainty about his targets. He raised his rifle and started shooting out the lights as he ran between parked cars.
Pull back! Pull back!
Dixon screamed through his bullhorn, realizing his mistake.
Pull back to the street! Seal off the entrance!
But Steele had no intention of making for the entrance. He kept moving, shooting out the lights as he ran, plunging the garage into increasing darkness. With his infrared optics, he could see in the dark, but so could the marshals equipped with riot helmets. However, Borodini's men were not so equipped and would have no way of being certain of their targets in the dark. He heard screaming as they started firing at anything that moved. The confusion was increasing. Steele emptied his dart launcher, firing the rest of his explosive-tipped darts at the men coming up behind him. The darts left the tube with a soft chuffing sound. Then seconds later, as their primers ignited, they whooshed through the air with a sudden burst of speed and exploded on impact, some of them striking parked cars and igniting the fuel in their tanks. The cars exploded, raining flame and metal fragments on the men around them. Steele ejected the now useless dart launcher. The magazine on his battle rifle was empty. He crouched down behind a pillar, tucked the stock of the rifle under his left arm, ripped out the empty magazine and snapped in a fresh one. Each magazine held 50 rounds, not counting the one he had just inserted. He had two remaining. He had still not used any of his shotgun shells, and he still had full magazines and spares for all his handguns. But he'd need two hands to reload quickly. As gunfire and shouting continued all around him, he put the rifle down on the floor, released the lock on his turret attachment, caught it in his right hand and as it dropped off, snapped his left hand back on, and clicked the turret attachment back into place on his belt. He wriggled the fingers on his left hand to test the connection and picked up his rifle once again. The men who had come up into the garage after him had finally managed to regroup so that they could move back up the street and seal off the entrance, but they first had to move the vans with which they'd blocked the ramp. Like idiots, they crowded around the vans while several of them tried to get inside at once. Steele fired off several long bursts in their direction, emptying the magazine and taking out at least half of them before they finally got the vans moved out of the way and retreated back up the ramp. He tossed the empty magazine away, snapped in a full one, and started moving once again as his muzzle flashes drew the fire of the others. The way up the ramp was clear now, and he headed in that direction, stopping several times to fire off short bursts from different locations, each time a little closer to the ramp. so that they would see the muzzle flashes and think they were driving him back up to the street. He emptied the magazine, inserted the last one, then quickly doubled back, staying low and holding his fire. Dixon was yelling at Borodini's men to cease firing, but they weren't listening to him. Half of them were firing at Shadows. The other half were firing at Dixon's men and at each other. Steele kept low, skirting the far wall of the garage, moving not toward the entrance as they expected, but toward the ramp leading down to the third level, working his way around behind them. He knew it wouldn't be long before the sounds of the firefight drew the Metro Police and Strike Force. He didn't give a damn about shooting Carmen's corrupt marshals, but he wasn't looking forward to having to fight Strike Force. They were his former fellow officers, and unlike these turkeys, they knew that what they were doing. Steele held his fire, working his way around behind them carefully. Having seen the muscle flashes up ahead of them, they were moving forward, using all available cover. Steele moved closer between parked cars, passing within only a few feet of several marshals and Borodini's men. He let them go by, unmolested. There was one in particular he kept looking for. And then he spotted him, about 20 feet away, standing behind a support pillar and holding a 10mm semi-automatic in both hands. He had no riot helmet or battle armor and was being very careful. He kept his gaze focused ahead of him, toward the ramp leading to the garage entrance, illuminated by the headlights of the vans, one of the disabled cruisers, and the flaming wreckage near the middle of the garage. They were all ahead of him now. Steele moved softly. He was only about 15 feet away now. He slung the battle rifle over his shoulder, reached down to the sheath, strapped to his left thigh, and drew his combat bowie. 10 feet. He transferred the knife to his right hand as he crept forward. 5, 4, 3.
"Hello, Rick," Steele said softly.
As Rick Borodini spun around, Steele grabbed his gun with his left hand and quickly levered it up out of his grasp. At the same time, he drove the 8-inch blade deep into Rick's stomach, plunging it into the hilt and forcing him back against the support pillar. The knife made a sound going in like a hammer striking meat. Rick's breath whistled out of him, and his eyes bulged. Steele dropped Rick's gun to the floor, then grabbed him by the throat.
"That's for Jernigan,"
he said, whispering through gritted teeth, his face up close to Rick's.
"And this one's for Passarelli."
He pulled out the knife and drove it in again.
"And for Marshak."
The knife thudded in once more.
"And for Coblins."
He stabbed again. Blood frothed on Rick Borodini's lips. He made a hideous, choking, gargling sound.
"Say hi to Tommy for me, you son of a bitch."
He jerked up on the knife and Rick's guts came spilling out. He let him fall to the floor, wiped the blade off on Rick's custom-tailored suit, sheathed it, and spat on him.
"And now for your scumbag father!"
He turned and moved quickly down the ramp to the third level. The lights were on down here, but it didn't matter. Dixon's men would realize their mistake in moments, but unless they were utter fools, they wouldn't be coming back down after him. There was only one way out. They'd simply wait for reinforcements from Metro and Strike Force. If they'd done that in the first place, Steele thought, they would have had me. But Dixon probably wanted to hog the credit for the kill. And then, of course, it might have been awkward explaining what he was doing working with Borodini's men.
"Borodini!"
Steele shouted as he came down the ramp. The black limo at the far end of the garage roared to life. The laser tube slid out through the gun port in Steele's left hand. He raised it and fired. The beam lanced out across the length of the garage, burning right through the windshield and the driver's skull. The car jerked and stalled. Steele started forward. Victor Borodini came out of the back and bolted for the driver's door. Steele fired a short burst from his battle rifle, one-handed, driving Borodini away from the door.
"I just sent your son to hell,"
he said as he came closer. Borodini bolted to the side. Steele cut him off with another short burst.
"Uh-uh, Victor, not that way."
Borodini made a dash for the other side. Steele fired once more, driving him back.
"Not that way either."
He kept coming closer. He fired a burst to Borodini's left, and then to his right, then his left again, making him go back and forth like a metal duck in a shooting gallery until the magazine was empty.
"Nowhere to run, Victor. Guess Polly's gonna have to take over the family business now. He's a smart kid, but I doubt he'll last long against the Delanos and the Pastorellis. Maybe they'll make him an offer he can't refuse." "God damn you, Steele!"
Borodini shouted.
"God damn you to hell! Cheer up, Victor! Maybe Polly will find himself a nice boy and settle down!"
Borodini screamed and drew his gun. He kept screaming as he emptied the entire 15-round magazine at Steele, firing with both hands. Steele felt the bullet's impact on his chest, but he kept on coming. The slide on Borodini's pistol locked back as he ran out of bullets and hurled the gun. It was a wild throw. It didn't even come close. Not that it would have made any difference.
Kiss it goodbye, Victor!
Steele said, and pumped all five shotgun rounds into him. The echoes reverberated through the garage like thunder. Steele stared down at the gory remains and tossed the empty rifle aside. He still had plenty of shotgun rounds left, but they wouldn't make much difference against what would be waiting for him outside. And then he looked at Borodini's heavily armored limo. He smiled.
Why, thank you, Victor! I always wanted to drive one of these things!
He opened the door and pulled out the driver's body. He got into the front seat and turned the key. It started right up. He glanced at the gas gauge, 3/4 full. Then he checked the specially designed console next to his right leg. All the little buttons and switches were conveniently labeled. He flipped the one marked
Shields.
He heard a soft whining sound as a steel shield slid up over the windshield, and similar shields slid up over the side and rear windows. There was a small aperture in front of him through which he could see straight ahead.
I'll be damned,
he said. The unfortunate driver had never had a chance to raise them.
You always were a careful man, Victor. But not careful enough.
He glanced down at the console again. There was one switched marked
front battery
with a red button just below it, and another marked
rear battery
with an identical red button below it.
Front and rear machine guns, Steele said. Not bad. Not bad at all. What the hell is this?
He flipped a switch marked
wheels.
He heard something whining, but he had no idea what it was. He opened the door and stepped out. Heavy metal wheel skirts had slid down into position, and what looked like a heavy steel front spoiler had dropped down from behind the front bumper, effectively shielding the tires from the front. There was also one at the rear.
Jesus! This thing's a fucking tank!
Said Steele with awe. He got back behind the wheel, closed the door, and shifted into gear. He drove back towards the ramp and up to the second level. It seemed deserted. There was nothing but the debris and bodies from the fight. He eased past the wreckage of the pickup truck and the cruisers, past the vans, and drove slowly up the ramp to the first level.
Okay,
he said to himself, taking a deep breath.
Here goes nothing.
He floored it. The heavy car shot forward with a powerful burst of speed.
Christ, what the hell has he got in this thing?
Steele kept it floored as he came roaring up the ramp toward the entrance. They had left it open, unblocked, to give themselves a clear field of fire. Sparks shot from the wheel shields as the heavy car came flying up the ramp. They have several metro cars pulled up in front across the street to give them a protective barrier. Steele couldn't see to the sides through the narrow aperture, but he figured they probably had cars blocking the street on either side. They opened fire as he came flying out through the front entrance, literally flying, as the heavy car became airborne for a moment and then hit the ground hard. He fought the wheel as bullets spanged off the shield, penetrating through it in several places because they were using armor-piercing rounds. He turned left, fighting the skid, steering into it, and the back end slewed around, then straightened, and he shot forward, flooring the accelerator, ramming his way between two metro cruisers blocking the street, waiting for the choppers to fire their rockets and incinerate him. And then he realized that it was raining. It was coming down in sheets. A full-fledged thunderstorm.
All right, God! He yelled. Yeah! Yeah!
The choppers were all grounded. He skidded around the corner, corrected, and flipped the switches to lower the shields and raise the wheel skirts and front and rear deflectors. He could hear sirens behind him, but he was well out in front. Two metro cruisers were coming down the street, heading toward him, sirens wailing, lights flashing. He flipped the switch for the front machine guns and hit the firing button. As the guns opened up, the two metro cruisers swerved out of the way, and he roared past them, then turned east, heading for the Midtown Tunnel. If they'd anticipated him and had it blocked off... He hadn't seen a single Strike Force cruiser. Why? Jake. God damn it, Jake, they'll have your ass for this, he thought. But at the same time, he blessed him. Another Metro unit came speeding out from a side street, and Steele rammed it as he went past, almost losing control, but straightening out at the last minute and maintaining it. He glanced at the speedometer. He was doing almost 90. He saw flashing lights in his rearview mirror.
Come on! Come on!
He said as the speedometer needle crept up. The Midtown Tunnel entrance was just ahead. They hadn't blocked it off yet. As he raced towards the tunnel, two Metro units came sliding around the corner just behind him, but they were too late. He roared into the tunnel, and in his rearview mirror, he saw the Metro units stopping at the tunnel entrance. They weren't going to follow. Long Island was out of their jurisdiction, and with the storm, they wouldn't be sending choppers out in pursuit.
Son of a bitch!
He said.
I made it!
End of chapter.